Let's read the scripture, Matthew 2:19-23. We're going to have two sermons this morning. Blaine assures us that we get two for, but he didn't say what. So I'll be reading the first set of scriptures, and Roger Eshelman will follow with the second in the second session. After Herod died, an angel of the Lord appeared in a dream to Joseph in Egypt and said, "Get up, take the child and his mother, and go to the land of Israel, for those who are trying to take the child's life are dead." So he got up, took the child and his mother, and went to the land of Israel. But when he heard that Archias was reigning in Judah in place of his father Herod, he was afraid to go there. Having been warned in a dream, he withdrew to the district of Galilee, and he went and he lived in a town called Nazareth. So was fulfilled what was said through the prophets, that he would be called a Nazarene. Lane?
Like father, like son, have you heard this before? Probably plenty of times. It's a common phrase, or maybe we've heard a different version of it, like mother, like daughter. It's the same idea. Or maybe another way to express it you've heard was, the apple doesn't fall very far from the tree. Or at another time we may have found ourselves saying, they're just a chip off the old block. Sometimes when we say these phrases, we're talking about looks, how we might observe physical traits very similar to those of our parents, and how quickly we will look for them in a newborn child. She's got her mother's blue eyes. He's going to be bald just like his father and his grandfather before him. You can see it already. I remember climbing into a subway car in downtown London one time on a trip and saw this woman who looked just like Connie's Aunt Lillian, an aunt on her mother's side. And I could tell instantly where Connie's ancestors came from. You could see it in their rounder faces and their little mouths. By the way they looked. Sometimes when we say a chip off the old block, we're talking about physical traits. But sometime, try Googling like father, like son. And when you do, it comes up as a proverb, a time-tested way of saying it means more than looks. Like father, like son is meant to convey a character trait, meant to convey a son's behavior or character can be expected to resemble that of their father. Not sure how we dads feel about that. Not sure how your moms feel about that. But the cultural proverb, like father, like son, does come pretty close to another proverb found in the Bible, which says, train up a child in the way he will go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. That there just might be a connection to the way the child behaves and the behavior of their mother or their father. Like father, like son is why Jesus landed in Nazareth. This week's first scripture lesson that we have heard from Matthew is actually a repeat from last week, where Mary and Joseph take Jesus to Egypt to escape Herod, to find refuge, and they were refugees in Egypt for a while. But as it turns out, though Herod is now dead, the coast is still not clear, for Herod's son Archelaus steps in to rule Judea. And Archelaus is very much like his father, like son. Brutal father, brutal son. Archelaus's Judea is not any safer than Herod's Judea was. And it says Joseph was afraid to go there. It says in our scripture lesson, Joseph was afraid to settle in Archelaus's Judea. And afraid of what, we might ask? Well, for one, there was this like father, like son thing going on. King Herod, it might come somewhat as a surprise, in that day and in that age, King Herod may have been called a king, but he was not king of the mountain. He was not top dog. He was not the big kahuna. He was not the big cheese, the top banana, the muckety muck, or the head honcho. He was not. He was more of a ruling minion. In that day and in that age, the biggest boss, of course, was the Roman emperor. The buck stopped over there across the Mediterranean Sea in Rome. So Herod might have been a king, but he was, shall we say, a territorial king, only in charge of a very small territory. And the Roman Empire was huge, and the Roman emperor's job was huger. And so then the king of a smaller territory's job, like Herod's, was to keep the huge empire's best interest in mind, keep it rolling, keep the taxes collected, and to keep a lid on any kind of rebellion that may come up, and to make it all work. And of course, one way to keep a lid on rebellious activity is to stave it off, to kill it off, if needs be. Any threats? Whack. A big and bloody whack. And Herod was quite efficient at the getting rid of part of his job. The scent of a baby who might become a king? Thud. And he dumped 9 wives by killing one as well as 2 of his sons. If one is to answer to the big cheese emperor, one must be an expedient in these matters. And Herod was. But Joseph had had a dream, and he escaped from Herod's territory and lived as refugees in Egypt for a while. I want to put up a map and have you look at it. Ooh, yeah, there it is. I wish the colors were a little brighter, but notice that there are 3 different shades of green. It turns out that when King Herod died, his territory was split up 3 ways and given to his 3 sons to rule. One son was named Philip, and he ruled the light green area to the top and to the right. Another son was named Antipas, and he ruled the middle green area, which is actually where Nazareth is. And last but not least is Archelaus. He ruled the dark green area to the south, where you see Jerusalem is. And he was the like father, like son, son. We heard in our scripture reading that Joseph was afraid of Archelaus, and for good reason. News does travel fast, and bad news travels faster. It had all started a few years before with King Herod, who for whatever reason had placed a golden eagle over the temple entrance in Jerusalem. Now this was bad. This was really, really bad. Because for devout Jews, having a graven image over the door of your sacred temple is nothing short of blasphemy. It is pure and simply out of bounds, and it needed an action plan, and it needed it now. So a few of the most devoted persons took to the golden image with axes and chopped it the heck down. Well, this did not sit well with Herod, for it had the smell of rebellion. And so he rounded up 2 famous Jewish teachers and 40 of their students, and he had them burnt. Burnt. The same way that you would burn a sacrifice in the temple, which is so twisted and so cruel. Well, when Herod died, his son Archelaus became the new king, and he is left with the leftover tensions that his father had left him. And they were now getting close to riot stage. So Archelaus sent his entire army into the temple city to squelch it. And 3,000 dead later, and Passover season canceled, it was done. It was squelched. Archelaus, like father, like son. And it says in our scripture lesson that Joseph was afraid to go live in his region, and so Mary and Joseph did the next best thing. They settled with Jesus just to the north in the Galilee district in a town called Nazareth. And I do not know what we are to think of Nazareth, Jesus' hometown, but according to this morning's reading, Nazareth was more of a default setting. The area of Judea was too dangerous, so that Joseph and his family settled down in Nazareth instead. And I do not know what we are to think of Jesus' early geography period. To Bethlehem, danger. To Egypt, for safety. To Judea, for danger. To Nazareth, for safety. Jesus certainly was not born with a silver spoon in his mouth. I think we can figure that out. He was not. But what are we to make out of it all? This is not very glorious for a young baby boy named Jesus. And yet, there is a thread running through all of this of God provoking dreams that do not eliminate the danger, that the danger is described there as all too common and it's all too real. But the God thread of Joseph dreams is leading them through and around the dangerous places. And I do wonder if there's a lesson in that.
Luke 4:16-31. And he went to Nazareth, where he had been brought up. And on the Sabbath day, he went to the synagogue, as was his custom, and he stood up to read. And the scroll of the prophet Isaiah was handed to him. Unrolling it, he found the place where it is written, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me, because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners, and recovery of sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." And then he rolled up the scroll, and he gave it back to the attendant and sat down. The eyes of everyone in the synagogue were fastened on him. And he began by saying to them, "Today, this scripture is fulfilled in your hearing." And all spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that came from his lips. "Isn't this Joseph's son?" they asked. Jesus said to them, "Surely you will quote this proverb to me, 'Physician, heal yourself.' And you will tell me, 'Do here in your hometown what we have heard you did in Capernaum.' Truly I tell you," he continued, "no prophet is accepted in his hometown. I assure you that there were many widows in Israel in Elijah's time, when the sky was shut up for 3.5 years. And there was a severe famine throughout the land. Yet Elijah was not sent to any of them, but to a widow in Zarephath in the region of Sidon. And there were many in Israel with leprosy in the time of Elijah the prophet. Yet not one of them was cleansed, only Naaman the Syrian." And all the people in the synagogue were furious when they heard this, and they got up and drove him out of the town, took him to the brow of a hill on which the town was built, in order to throw him off the cliff. But he walked right through the crowd and went on his way. Then he went down to Capernaum, a town in Galilee, and on the Sabbath he taught the people.
Nazareth, Jesus' hometown, where he had been brought up, our scriptures tell us. Nazareth, Jesus was from there. And what kind of picture do you carry in your mind's eye for Nazareth? Not sure what you think about your own growing up town, if it conjures up nostalgia the way it has for Lorraine. Not sure if it conjures up nostalgia or flight. If you have a certain swell of pride in your voice when you say, "I'm from Greencastle, I'm from Ship, I work in Hagerstown." What do you think of your growing up town? As most of you know, and I've heard many times before, Connie and I lived in northeastern Pennsylvania for most of our lives. We cannot accurately say that we came from the town of Susquehanna. We can only accurately say we went into town of Susquehanna, for we were both raised rural kids in the countryside. Now, on the map, we were about 20 miles from the New York state border and about 40 miles from the New Jersey border. And oh my, where we're from, there are a lot of New Jersey stories that have circulated where we lived. Actually, we often shortened it to Jersey, and we often said it with a subtle but disparaging tone, Jersey. For though these Jersey folk may have come our way looking for cabins and recreation, we saw them as invaders. And we could be rather defensive about our home turf. There were Jersey drivers who did not drive like we drove. Our driving was the only sensible way to drive on windy gravel roads. You could tell the difference in the driving. There were Jersey hunters who drove around in their fancy pickup trucks and hunted deer from the road instead of getting out of the truck and going into the woods like you're supposed to. It was not too hard to tell them apart, what with their fancy rifles and their fancy orange coats, which never got out of the truck in the first place, by the way. They hunted wrong, and we rehearsed that fact every December. And sometimes we used the term Jerseyites, for they did seem to have a kind of superior attitude when they came invading our turf. They seemed to think that they could hunt on properties without asking. They seemed to post their own properties with no trespassing signs more than we thought necessary. They seemed to have a bit of an uppity attitude when it came to the goods and services that our county had and that they were expected to be providing for them. Jerseyites, with their accents, where did that funny talk come from? And it didn't help, of course, when I went to college and I met John, who was from Irvington, New Jersey, and he said he'd never, ever, ever move back there again. And I thought, of course you wouldn't. And it didn't help to hear Zach from our church say that he lived for a time in Hackensack, and he said he would never move back there. And I thought, well, of course you wouldn't. Why would ya? Jerseyites, they talk funny over there, their attitudes are sketchy, and what religion did they have over there in Jersey, if any? And all of this, of course, was predicated on the notion that the place we grew up had it all together. It was the best place to grow up and to live, and that it was worth defending to keep the Jerseyites, as well as Philadelphians, mind you, at bay. What was your growing up geography like? Would you defend it, or would you flee it? So what is our thinking about Nazareth? Do we think if Jesus was Nazareth's most famous person that it must have been a perfect place? If Jesus was good, then Nazareth must have been? Do we think that if Joseph's dream had landed their family there, if God had led Mary and Joseph and Jesus to start their family there, that it must have been an idyllic location? Like the pictures in my mom's Bible story book? Well, according to what Roger just read for us, there did come a day when Jesus stood up in the hometown Nazareth synagogue and he read the scripture, and so far so good. The response was favorable. The approval ratings were spectacular. It says, all spoke well of him and were amazed at the gracious words that were coming from his mouth. It says that in the text. And can we imagine their appreciative groans and tones of voices when they said, is this not Joseph's son? Is this not Joe's boy? Attaboy, you go, Joe's boy, hometown prodigy that you are. But then it went south. Then things got ugly and quickly. And it got ugly because Jesus began to talk about foreigners in a way that was just a little over the top. It got ugly because Jesus began making heroes out of the wrong people. It was as if Jesus was making heroes out of Jerseyites, when we all know life would be better for everyone if they stayed on their own side of the Delaware River where they belong. God forbid that good could come from them, from Jerseyites. That's exactly what Jesus is saying. That a foreign widow from Sidon was the one who helped out hometown Elijah during a rough patch in his life, when in fact there were plenty of hometown widows who could have done it, but it was the Sidonian woman who did, and woot woot for the Sidonians. And speaking of the hometown medical problems, we have had plenty of leprosy in and around here, and so then did it come about one day back in Elijah's time that it was a Syrian guy that God cleansed and not any of our good folk? Why God healed the Syrian guy and not our guy? Did any of you catch the YouTube clip of Mamadou Gassama that went viral this week? This man who is now dubbed the Spider-Man of Paris. This man who saw a crowd beginning to gather around the base of a Paris apartment building, and they were all looking up at a 4-year-old child dangling from the 5-story ledge. And he sprang into action. He jumped up to grab the outside railing and athletically pulled himself up from one story to the next, one floor at a time, until he reached the child and pulled him to safety. It was a heroic feat, but somewhat bittersweet, for he is an undocumented man from Mali, in a French city that has seen both undocumented persons doing terror, now had an undocumented hero. What do you do with that? It got ugly in the Nazareth synagogue that day because Jesus sided with Scripture instead of the hometown attitude that the Lord's favor had also included Sidonians and Syrians, and that the Lord's favor would now include a whole bunch of other people. And the hometown crowd got so ticked off that they pushed Jesus towards a cliff to shove him off. Later theology that developed said that Jesus came to forgive sin, and that is certainly true. But what happened that day in the Nazareth synagogue was that Jesus began by first naming that sin, and it didn't go well. For the crowd pushing Jesus towards the cliff thought sin that resided outside the borders of its town, of its territory, with other people types, they over there, they were the sinners. But Jesus called them on it and said, no. It's in here, too. It's in Nazareth. Sin is in here. Nazareth is a place on the map, was the safety net town that Joseph originally landed in. It was the place where Jesus grew up. It was also the town that Jesus left behind, left its attitude, and left behind its righteous fury. And I do wonder if there's a lesson in that. A very early Christian described sin in this way. The heart itself is such a small vessel, yet dragons are in there and also lions, and there are poisonous beasts and all treasures of evil in one's heart. But in one's heart, too, there is God, the angels, the life and the kingdom, the light and the apostles and the heavenly cities and all the treasuries of grace. All things are in there. Our own hearts, if we are honest, that can carry both poison, but also the treasuries of grace. And this day, with this scripture in hand, we might ask, what part of my heart is growing? What part of my heart is going into town? And is our hometown a place where the graces of God are springing up for everyone?